Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. Every week, our shows focus on the intersection of technology, media, and entrepreneurship with influencers and changemakers around the globe. You're a vital part of this program. As always, please send in your questions to the program via Twitter, Facebook, blog, and email throughout the show, and I will work them in as I can. Today, Monday the 13th, 2011, we have a very special treat. We have Evan Hamilton, who you may know if you are a big Twitter user, a very strong presence on Twitter for community management in general, but for his company User Voice, which is one of the wonderful customer-facing solutions out there for customer service, which promises to build smarter, better ways to interact with customers. And I welcome you to the show, Evan.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning. So, yeah, it's morning for us in New York. It's a little bit later, and wanted to shout out hello to all of our friends in New York who are celebrating, hopefully, Internet Week or having lots of critical discussions about that. And I want to start with kind of a question. I think, you know, one of the things that I was telling you about the social media boot camp we're doing for Media Bistro, you know, talking about loving to compare, you know, people say, what are the books to read about social media? And you know, I'm keen to get them interested in customer service, obviously. So, you know, one discussion that came up in the San Francisco community around Social Media Club, which we're both involved with in different ways, is the role of the community manager. Now, your role is community manager at User Voice. So maybe you could start by telling us a little bit about User Voice and your role there, and we can talk a little bit more about that role from that point.
Sure. So User Voice builds customer engagement tools, and it sounds like a fancy word, but really the point is that there's no such thing as just customer service in a bubble. There's no such thing as product development in a bubble. It's all about engaging with your customers. And if your customers are engaged, if they're happy, that's how you're going to succeed as a business. And many different businesses do it in many different ways. So we're trying to build tools that make it really easy for you to deliver whatever your unique sort of customer engagement is. So we have feedback forums where your customers can tell you what they want out of your company, what they want out of your product, that prioritizes that for you so you know what's most important. And we have customer service tools which allow you to collect user issues, respond to them, and easily take care of all those customer frustrations. But really what we're trying to sell is a process, a way of thinking about and dealing with your customers in a way that leaves them happy and you hopefully not exhausted at the end of the day. So that's the short of it. And what I do at User Voice is a lot of content creation. I manage our social media accounts and just really a lot of talking to people, whether it's on Twitter, in person, at various events, about how to provide better customer service, how to engage your customers, how to understand what they want. And that's what I care about.
So basic question for those out there that may be going, okay, well, customer service, engagement, they may be thinking about measuring those in different ways because there are different tools that measure them. Is there a difference between those two things to you, and how do you define them?
You know, I think at the end of the day, it's customer satisfaction, because there's various different ways that you can measure how you're interacting with your customers, and I don't think there's a right way as long as they're happy. You know, one thing that people like to point out is there's, you know, the Zappos of the world who are all about, you know, answering the phone, being lovely to you, and fixing your issues. And then there's the equally beloved, you know, Apple, who is not really known for great customer service.
No.
So how do you reconcile those two? And I think at the end of the day, it is about making those customers happy. And they just do it in different ways. Apple makes these really intuitive, really pretty products that people get really excited about. And in some ways, they have to do less customer support because they're providing such an intuitive product. you know, Zappos then focuses on the actual experience of, you know, I'm trying to figure out what shoe to buy, I'm having an issue with your billing system, and making that lovely. So I think if there's one thing you're looking at, it's really just customer happiness, and then there's a lot of different levers that can affect that. But looking at one thing like first call resolution or how many tweets you got or anything like that isn't going to tell you the real story.
So how do you dig deeper and find that real story? I mean, one of the unique things about user voice is anyone can really go create an account, log in, probably find a forum, and complain or try to be heard, I guess, is the bigger issue. For most, it seems like for most real, you know, honest, non-troll type customer service questions, if people are trying to dig deep and using social, let's say using online channels, you know, they may stumble upon user voice. What's the experience like there for people that haven't been to user voice?
So if you go to a user voice forum per company, you'll have the option to search and view a number of ideas posted by other customers. And then you can either comment on those, join the conversation, or you can vote for them and say, oh, yes, I would also like to see you add this feature. If you don't see the feature that you're looking for, you can actually add your own idea, and then people can vote on that. So, you know, a lot of people talk about listening to your customers, and we're really focused on understanding them because you can listen all day and not really know what's going on. And so the point of the forums is instead of just everyone posting their one little thing they want, that we're aggregating the interest in each of these features. And so you can go in, and instead of you posting your own feature, which 10 other people have already posted, you're voting. And it also gets more of your customer base engaged. There's a lot of quiet, shy people out there who aren't going to post, hey, I really need this feature. But if all they have to do is click a vote button and say, I'd like to give this 3 votes, they will participate.
So as community manager, there's been some discussion, I was talking about the sort of critical theory or critical, the mass critical thought, you know, so those of us immersed in social media all of the time or that are at least online all of the time, which is kind of what I think of the role of people that have jobs doing consulting or whatever it is that they're doing online. Community management certainly falls within that category. You know, I people will always say, oh, what's the book to read for this particular topic? And I like to at least have 2 and say, you know, compare these 2 and then take away what you think works best for you, because there is no one sort of, you know, gosh, for lack of a better term, Bible, even though there's, you know, the Quran, there's you know, side point, you know, talking to somebody from Syria about how the Quran probably has just as many things, you know, points of interpretation as the Bible. So, you know, even within those sort of texts that we refer to, you know, as sort of like the end-all be-all or the way things are, there's still that need to kind of compare and contrast. So you had been part of a conversation out here in San Francisco about you know, the role of the community manager moving forward and whether that role will exist, whether it will go away. And you had some interesting thoughts about that. And I just thought it'd be interesting to let the larger community in on that conversation and kind of how it came about and your thoughts, because I think they were quite interesting.
Well, thank you. You know, I think there's a lot of confusion over what a community manager does. And I think, you know, the reason for that really is that we do a lot of different things, and you can go to one company and talk to a community manager and go to another and talk to a different one, and they do very different things. But the main confusion really is between, I think, a social media expert or whatever you want to call them, guru, ninja, and a community manager. And I wrote a post the other day at basically said, you know, you're not going to hire someone for your sales department who's an expert at selling to people between ages 21 and 26. You're hiring someone who's great at selling. Community manager, I think it's the same thing. You're not going to hire a social media expert. I don't recommend that. There are plenty of people who happen to be social media experts who point of the community manager is someone who can empathize with your customers and with your company and can really bridge the gap there and leave everyone happy. And that's something that not all social media experts have. Some do. But that's the thing one should be looking for. If Facebook and Twitter disappeared tomorrow, if the internet shut down tomorrow, community managers would still be, whatever their title was, doing what we're doing, which is connecting companies and customers and making both happy. And I think we need to think beyond hanging out on Twitter, even though I love Twitter and it's a really powerful tool for connecting people. And we need to think beyond kind of reacting day to day and really focus on how we can build these stronger relationships. And it's hard to find that time, but if we take a step back, it's really something that needs to be a company-wide effort that isn't at all centralized around social media. It's centralized around a company. And I think Zappos has really embodied that. You mentioned the two books to read. You know, I would say everyone really should read the book by the Zappos CEO, Tony Hsieh, Delivering Happiness. Not because everyone should do what Zappos does, but because the point of that book is they figured out what their passion was and what they hoped the passion of their customers were, and then they built a company around it. And it was less about tools, it was less about specific practices, it was about having a whole company passionate and united about this goal. And once you do that, you have to worry less about those individual channels because the whole company will be pushing in each of their own silos towards that goal. And I think so few companies have that. You know, it's a challenge that I deal with every day and that I continually am trying to push User Voice towards is knowing what we're about and representing that. And, you know, when you have those moments where you go, oh, we're all on the same page, we all believe in this, great, let's break and let's go do our own thing, that's really powerful, much more powerful than, you know, somebody manning a Twitter account.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were talking about this before the show started. You know, my concern when I consult, you know, is always, okay, well, where's the rep from say, community support or, you know, whatever the traditional channels have been, say, you know, phone support or if it's a tech company, you know, maybe they have a chat support or whatever, getting all those stakeholders in the same room and aligning them along the same principles, right? So if I'm a social media management consultant, my job should be to align against business goals, right? Whether or not, like you said, the internet exists or not. So I should be increasing lead generation. I should be, you know, helping get the message out about the company, which, you know, through whatever channels make the most sense, you know, financially, et cetera, et cetera. So how do you, you know, it seems like in your role, there's part of your role where you have to talk the talk. This is sort of the best practice and how it should be. And then there's the reality of kind of how it works. And you actually wrote a blog post about driving through the rain in San Francisco, and I think there's some corollaries there. I don't know if you want to make them. And I maybe have the title of the post wrong, but it just struck me as funny because, you know, I thought of one thing and then you started writing about it and it was a little bit different, but it was a great take. But how do you get this, you know, how do you advise companies, I guess, in terms of, you know, if you want to make everyone happy, is it really about using the user voice solution most of the time, or is it more about trying to get that their heads around the role of customer service in today's world? You know, yeah, you've got this great online profile and it's huge and it keeps building and getting larger. But if you leave the customer behind or don't factor that in, then your business goals are going to fail, right? Because you're not going to make customers happy. You're not going to have, as you know, Tony Hsieh talks about, you're not going to have the centralized passion.
Absolutely. Well, I think the key is going back to understanding your customers. And, you know, that's the name of the blog for User Voice, and it's very intentional because, you know, there's not one, as I said, not one size fits all. Not everyone can do what Zappos did, both, you know, financially, but also it just doesn't fit the style of some companies, and that's fine.
Absolutely.
It's about taking that time to understand what your customers want, who they are, and how you can provide that. And even Zappos, again, if you read the book, you'll see that at various points they realigned their values and their goals based on, okay, well, you know, we've been doing this for a couple of years. Do we think these same values are the correct ones? And they do change. Your customers change. Your company changes. Being aware of all of that is very key. So, you know, you don't need to use user voice for that. But it certainly makes it a lot easier and less painful, I think. But it's taking that time. And I think the role of the community manager or whatever their title may be in the future has to be around guiding that understanding. And I've pushed several times this concept of community manager as a horizontal position. You know, a lot of positions are vertical. If you're on the QA team, you're vertical. You report up to the head of engineering. The head of engineering tells the development team about what you found and what to fix. The rest of the company doesn't need to know about that. The HR person does not care or need to know what the QA team found. But the CEO at the top is a horizontal position. They need to know everything that's going on.
We hope. It doesn't always work out that way, but we hope that they are.
And I think, you know, going back to the Apple example, again, not necessarily great customer service, but Steve Jobs clearly is aware, and we've read about this, him being kind of this micromanager who's aware of everything. He's aware of everything that's going on in the company, and he brings it all together in a way that results in this product that people are incredibly passionate about. And I think Tony Hsieh does the same thing at Zappos. He understands all the aspects and helps people move in a direction that will accomplish the values that they've set forth. So, you know, can be a CEO, but I think also a community manager can be in that position where they're horizontal, they're working with every department, and that's everyone from the people manning the Twitter account to the people building the product to the HR department and making sure all of those jive. Because if you're hiring people who believe in what you believe in, if you are building a product based on what your customers are saying, and if then you're providing the level of customer support that you think is the right thing for your customers, it's all going to work together and do something amazing. But if you have an amazing Twitter account and you're building a product that isn't what your customers want, it doesn't matter. And sorry, I'm rambling a little bit here, but you know, I think
it's all really valuable information.
One really key example that I saw that in a presentation I did called Why the Community Manager Won't Exist in 5 Years is there was Comcast Cares, which everyone was very aware of, Comcast's effort to provide support via social media, and they were very responsive and wonderful, and it was this big story, and everyone said, this is the future of customer service. But if you look at their American Consumer Satisfaction Index scores, during the year that they started providing this, they barely changed their customer satisfaction score. And it's still, they were still far below their competitors. And if you think about cable company customer satisfaction scores, they're probably all pretty low. So
yeah,
the point being, you can't be in that silo doing great customer service if your product isn't great, if you're, you know, the rest of your customer support isn't great. It has to be a company-wide effort.
I think that's such a great point. Now, one of the things that I think eludes people is, so you talk about the community satisfaction scoring and indexing and those types of things. What are some of the tools that people could look at to get real data? Because I think that's one of the key questions, especially for, you know, small and medium businesses. You know, they don't know whether they should really engage with a user voice or a competing company because they're not really sure if they have a customer service problem. You know, I think if they're using a consultant for you know, social media, hopefully that person or anybody that's good should be using some sort of listening solution to help identify what the key issues are, if any, with a particular company, business, or effort. But you know, that may not be affordable. They may not know how to use it. Building queries is its own thing that data geeks like me like to work on. So you know, where do you find something like a customer satisfaction score to know if you have you've moved the needle and maybe not known it, or to sort of measure customer service?
Well, there's several established measurements. One of the more promoter ones, popular ones, is the Net Promoter Score, where you ask your customers, how likely are you to recommend our service to somebody else? And there's a certain number at which you say, okay, your customers are crazy about you, and there's a number at which you say, oh, they're kind of neutral about you. And so that's something one can use, and that's pretty easy. There's the American Consumer Satisfaction Index, which I don't know a lot about, but a lot of large companies are measured in that way. I don't think you have to use one of these. I think it's useful because you can compare it to other companies, but I think the best way is the simplest way. If you are sending out a 50-question survey to your customers, they're not going to get through it. The people who get through it are going to already be fanatical about your service, and so of course you're going to get great numbers. And that was something I dealt with at a previous company I was at. They send out these 50-question surveys, and the people who filled them out were already crazy about us. And so every time it was like, oh, we have these great customer satisfaction scores. And I'd say, well, I'm talking to our customers every day, and they're saying they're leaving our product. And we see the metrics. They are leaving our product. So that can't be true. So I think as often and as easy as you can make it, that's the best tool. The way User Voice does it, though we also do surveys to have a second piece of data, is our customer service system, User Voice Help Desk, has a link at the bottom of every email that you send to a customer where they can just click and give you kudos. And literally, they just click it. And it's not a very complex system, but what you get is very simple trending. And you can say, oh, we got 50 kudos last month, we got 10 this month. Clearly, our customer service has declined. Let's figure out why. I'd say do that over doing some sort of complex analysis any day, because you're going to get more reactions, and the more people you hear from, the clearer it's going to be. If your customers are unhappy and you're really listening, you'll know it. And after you do that, you can kind of dig in, figure out what is wrong. But throwing people 50-question surveys is not usually the answer.
Yeah, I don't think I would answer. That's the whole thing is, would you answer a 50? I mean, it's hard enough to get people to click on the link anyway. The other question I think that goes along with that in terms of surveying and sending out emails that have a way for people to give you feedback is, a lot of companies that are, I'm trying to think of, because in San Francisco we've got so many emerging companies all the time, and I'm constantly talking to entrepreneurs about various things. And one is, when do you have a big enough critical mass, so user base, to be able to even do a survey on the small side? So, and then when, what kind of sample size do you want on, let's say you've got a Microsoft and you're doing their, you're looking at their small, medium, and business. Let's say we take one subsection of their business. All of their small, medium business interface with customers that have that level of computers, and we're looking at their operating system. So, we're defining down, but it's still a pretty large segment. Do you have guidelines on, what the numbers should be? How many do you need I think that's one of the key questions is, how many people do you really need to survey, and what should you expect if you're doing it right in terms of, people actually responding to you?
Yeah, I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, but it's relatively easy to find them on the web. I would recommend
You probably have a better guideline than most people. I'd love to hear just what your gut tells you, and nobody's holding you to this. This is your own gut. If you feel like giving it a call, just to give people some sort of sense of, what that number should be. Because to me, it seems like, so if you have a community of like 5,000, that's probably enough to start surveying. If you have 50, that's not probably enough to tell you anything really valuable.
Well, I think that's what's tricky about surveys and why I am careful not to overuse surveys. We certainly do survey people, but I think surveys really only give you kind of a big picture, and you know, unless you're digging through thousands of responses in the other category, you don't really understand what you're seeing always. And that's not to say that I don't think you know, surveying and analytics are valuable. They absolutely are. And you know, there's a great book called Predictably Irrational about sort of understanding people's reactions and looking at the data of that. But I think people rely on these too much, and they say, well, people are unhappy, and they also said that they don't like feature A, so that must be the issue. And those two things are not necessarily correlated.
Right.
So this is one of the reasons we built User Voices, because if you are having a conversation with your customers, you'll be able to understand much more clearly what they want. And again, this is understanding versus listening. You can listen all day and hear some loud people, the vocal minority, complain, or you can do a survey and get some sort of vague numbers, but you won't really understand what the pain points are. So having a conversation, whether it's in the comment thread of a User Voice forum or whether it's just an email with someone or some other tool that you like, is really key, because a lot of times we say, oh, this person has this issue, we'll fix that. And it turns out we didn't really understand what their problem was. I don't think there's any, there's no such thing as a bad idea. It's just a bad solution to a real problem.
Yeah.
So frequently people get ideas and they say, oh, well, this idea is dumb. I don't know why they said this. We're never going to do this. And it turns out that person was trying to help them and come up with a solution for a real problem that they had. So if you take that time and say, well, can you explain to us why you want this feature, you may actually uncover a real issue underneath. So in short, I think surveys can be useful, but certainly you need a lot of people, and you need to be really sure that you're looking at what's causing what and not just making assumptions that are not necessarily there.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I would say anytime you're doing any sort of large number sort of situation, you should also be reaching out to those same customers and talking to them in person, because I think the two, data and conversation, can go together fantastically.
Yeah, I think having meetups, you know, around your company, you know, get out a bag of chips or whatever, you know, and just you know, you can have it themed around your company, but just getting people talking, if that's what it takes to get some feedback, is really helpful, you know, and have computers out if you're a small company, and just, you know, start to actually look at what they do. I mean, I come from TV land, right? So we used to watch through the mirror as people would, you know, react to different programs, and they would have the clickers and all that kind of stuff, and it's all funny kind of now when you look at it, or if I see parts of it coming up on Mad Men, you know, it's funny to watch, but it comes from a place that's actually really smart, and it's sad because TV's gotten so dumbed down, but, you know, there is something to be said for that one-on-one, you know, I'm paying attention to you, I'm listening to you kind of feedback, that's so incredibly important. And, you know, like, do you ever find, as you know, you, I would imagine, have customer service issues like the rest of us, or are not particularly satisfied with the service, hence the example of cable/, you know, satellite being a great one, right? Because, you know, TV or, you know, let's say Roku versus, you know, any of the other set-top boxes out there or whatever that are providing your entertainment, whatever your entertainment needs are, whether it's computer or television or whatever. You know, do you find yourself frustrated at all ever because maybe you feel like they could do some really simple things a lot better to help you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, even Hulu, which is relatively new and hip, you know, they're constantly asking me, is this commercial relevant to you? And I keep getting these car commercials, and I don't own a car, and I don't really want to own a car. And I keep saying, no, they're not relevant, and they keep showing them to me.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of these things where, you know, somebody probably meaning very well in a company says, I'm going to ask our customers something, and they do, and then they get stuck in the gears trying to pass that up to the people who make the decisions, and it just moves incredibly slowly. So I think, you know, another example is where someone got overly excited is I stayed at a hotel in Portland for the Community Leadership Summit last year. And I had like one little piece of feedback that I was excited to give them after I got back. They like didn't have soap in the bathroom or something weird like that. Other than that, it was lovely. And they sent me the survey that was the 50-question survey. And I was like, I just want to tell you this one thing, and if I told you this, you could fix it in 2 minutes and make a bunch of people happy. Instead, you send me the survey I'm not going to respond to. So it's really thinking about making it easy both to collect the feedback and also how to build in structures so you can pass that on to the team, because there's plenty of people collecting great feedback every day at companies that never gets acted upon. And so, you know, that's another problem with the community manager being in a silo. Customer support being in a silo is you're not passing that on to the company in any way where it gets done. So, you know, that's something every company struggles with. We still struggle with that here at User Voice, even though we're focused on customer service. You have to build in ways that these features can be discussed, these issues can be discussed, and then evaluated and fit into the schedule somehow, or decided this is not important. And it's a hard balance because there's always new things you're working on. There's always maintenance to be done, but you have to figure out how to do that, and you have to have those debates. And there has to be an environment where people are open to doing things based on customer feedback. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to be stuck showing those car commercials to me, even though I told you I don't like them.
Yeah, and I mean that comes from. You know, having worked in TV, that's so old school because car companies are the ones that have always advertised on television. So I would imagine they just have they probably have a surplus of these commercials, but they don't realize that if they didn't, they would think twice about what they're showing you, that, you know, they might actually upset you by, or you know, make you, you know, annoyed or whatever at the brand, by continuing to show them to you rather than showing you. I know that for me, they show tons of PSAs.
Mm-hmm.
So if, for people that don't know, public service announcements. So, yes, I'm, you know, a bleeding heart and love, you know, kids and causes. And, you know, I'm one of those people on Sundays. I've told, you know, everyone that knows me knows, watch out because you're going to get the the sign this, and I do try to be selective, but there's just so many things that need to be taken care of. So in any event, I totally hear you. I mean, one thing that happened to me recently is had to close accounts at Bank of America for whatever reason, reopen the accounts, and they have rules. And so I you know, work with lots of companies on back-end storage, and, you know, I've had the luck of, you know, learning a lot about data storage. And I know that there's, you know, FCC regulations about storing stuff. So sometimes knowing too much, you know, like the fact that my small business account can't have my personal account, but yet it has a lot of tools and stuff that will actually make me probably spend more money or use partners of Bank of America, but they won't let me use that, even though originally it was set up that way by a person at a branch, and then when I closed it and started over, I had to go through online banking. They have it, you know, segmented out so everything can go into my personal, but it can't go my personal can't go into my business profile. And I said, and so finally I asked the guy, I've talked to 3 people over probably 4 hours now that I don't have to try to solve this issue. And the last guy I talked to was really trying to understand, because he was feeling like, oh, I'm getting a lot of information here. Like, I'm trying to share with them what I know. And I'm saying, you know, this is a back-end encryption thing. It's cheaper to not have to segment out the data for personal in a business account, and just to say, okay, well, these are, you know, just to regularly audit them and say, okay, everything we're storing for business is business, so IRS, you can have it this, and then this is personal and whatever, and there may be some business mixed in, but this is, you know, that's probably what's happening. So I'm saving you more money, yet I would spend more money with you. So this guy's listening to me, and I just find that sometimes knowing too much is actually more frustrating, because you're trying so hard to get across what the feedback is, or I feel like I go off on they're thinking it's more of a rant, and it's really actually a, I'm giving them a lot of information that somebody would just, I'll say, this call is being recorded. Can you ask me just to take this piece of recorded conversation to a customer service person or to a product manager? And they'll understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Do you ever find that? Because that's the one thing for me, that especially working with a lot of tech companies where, imagine with User Voice, you've got so many different kinds of companies of all, as I said in the post about us, like all shapes and sizes. So you're learning probably at least a little bit about a lot of different kinds of companies. And I just wonder how you as a person functioning every day, how that impacts your world and how you sort of look at things as a result.
Yeah, I mean, we talk to a lot of companies and try and understand how they do customer support. That's something I'm doing every week. And before we built our help desk product, we talked to like 75 companies. And, I think the biggest challenge for most companies beyond that initial startup phase is scaling. And, there's a lot of talk about scaling infrastructure, how are we going to survive if we have a million people coming to the site? But there's rarely much talk about scaling customer support, because people picture, well, we get more customers, we'll just hire another support person. And I think that's a very, very dangerous way of thinking, because, very few ops guys are saying, well, if we have more people come to our site, we'll just install another box, because if that happens, if you get a New York Times article tomorrow and you have a million more people, you're not going to have that box installed in time. So, I think the key is figuring out how to scale smartly and efficiently, and that includes hiring more people, but it also includes building more structure and building more tools to help both the customer service agent but also the customer. And, I think in the bank's case, probably what happened is when they initially started, they had one bank, and everyone there knew everything, as you said. They had all this knowledge, and then gradually they got more branches and more, and people started to know a little less. They started having these call centers, and for a while it was one call center, and everyone would trade stories, and everyone would know how to do everything. And now it's
right. I think this is right on.
10 giant call centers now, where nobody's sharing stories, nobody really knows what's going on. And so
the managers don't share stories. That's I think, one of the key things is the people that should be most empowered, I'll get a manager that'll just do something, probably because they don't know the rule. And then others, we have this big rule and blah, 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 blah. They've got a different, obviously, very unequal, or very different anyway, levels of training.
Yeah.
To build on your point, I'm sorry, continue. It just occurred to me that's something to consider as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the problem with many of these companies is you call in each time and you get a different person, you retell your story. They may know more, as you said, or less about it than the previous person. And so, what they really should have been doing is probably having people with different sets of expertise, because, yes, for a bank, there's so much you would need to know to be able to do customer support for any situation. So instead of, them sitting there trying to comprehend and saying, well, I don't know if we can do that, they should have said, oh, you have an issue with business and personal. I'm going to transfer you to that department. And maybe that's five guys who only deal with that issue.
I know. And see, instead of having that segmented, in the case of Bank of America, not to continue too far down this path, but I think, granular examples can be really, really helpful. I know Jacob Morgan and I we were at a conference and we did this with American Airlines, and actually American Airlines sadly closed that Twitter account and migrated it over and didn't take any of the comments with them.
Mm-hmm.
So we had been, we had told people we were using this account to try to get things across, and he was so frustrated. He was like, I hate American Airlines. And I was like, well, I hated my experience, but I didn't feel like American Airlines got back to me. And the thing with Bank of America is sort of similar. Like, they don't know where to send me. So the last call, I actually started laughing, six transfers. I got transferred six times because no one knew exactly how to help me. So I kept, I was like writing down the names of the departments, because they tell you obviously when they pick up the phone. And, clearly there was a lack of understanding or training or knowing what the heck I was talking about or how to handle me or whatever, because I tend to be quite passionate about anything that I'm going to speak up about. And I think that that passion is something that I think is worth addressing, and you touched on that a little bit ago when you talked about the company you worked at before where, you know, if you have people responding to a 50-question survey, obviously they care. That's, you know, we can probably pretty much everyone can agree on that. It's the minutiae of the how do we get to the people that probably aren't passionate enough to get to the 50-question survey, but again, like you were talking about, they'll press the kudos button, or they would press like a thumbs up or thumbs down type of button that might give you some, you know, it's just one click, it's easy, you have feedback. You know, I would love to highlight some companies besides, you know, we've talked about the user voice solution, maybe some companies that you've built case studies around and how case studies even work within user voice, I think is really interesting. You know, do you guys work together in the different segments of your company and how user voice actually works to build out, you know, those great examples of companies that, you know, I know in your homepage you have Seismic and Posterous or however different people say it different ways, Posterous. Yeah, I'd love to know more about those examples, and I think the audience would as well.
Yeah, you know, we've talked to a lot of different companies, and I've written a lot of stories about companies. And again, nobody does it the same way, and I think that's fine. That's great. In fact, it gives an individuality. And you know, we try and allow you to customize your user voice experience, so it's individual as well. But you know, the focus is always on giving the customer what they need. And time again, when I talk to people, they say, you know, when we actually started doing that, we ended up having less work to do, or we ended up making more money. You know, so for example, this great company called Turn Social, which has a social toolbar for businesses, they provide their CEO's email address to their customers immediately upon signing up. It's on their website. Anytime they take any action, you know, they downgrade their account, he sends a, you know, an automatic email with a reply to being his address saying, let me know if I can help you out with that. And so, you know, you would really think from that, oh, man, he must just be buried in emails. But he's not. He actually doesn't receive that many because people know they can get a hold of him. And this is something mm-hmm. that I push a lot. You know, making yourself available actually means you'll probably do less support. Because the moment somebody feels like they can't get a hold of you, they get frustrated and they start flailing and they start screaming and then typing in all caps and, you know, posting on Twitter about how horrible your company is. And so Turn Social, for example, has their email, their CEO's email address available, and anytime somebody needs to, they can get a hold of them. And so he says he doesn't get that many emails, but when he does, he's usually able to resolve them. And oh my, I can't remember what the number is. I can try and look now. It's something like 50% of people who are abandoning their account actually end up signing back up because they get this email from him, they have a conversation with him, and he works out what their issues are. So, it, you know, it's about that accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another example is Telfy, which they do, it's basically like Google Voice for business. They've used user voice and set up their knowledge base so that when people are sending messages to them, they automatically get FAQ articles basically brought in front of them that might answer that question. And they've gotten incredibly fewer tickets, user issues, ever since they did that. And instead of using that as an excuse to, you know, go to happy hour early, they said, it means that we can talk to our customers more. Instead of answering the same questions over and over, we can then spend more time really engaging with them. I'm not sure how far I've deviated from the question at this point.
No, you haven't. So say the name of the company again.
That was Telfy.
How do you spell that?
T-E-L-L-F-I. And someone I just talked to this morning... I spoke to Rapid Buyer this morning, and they're not a customer of ours, but I wanted to hear about how they do support. And, you know, they've done a really great job. If you go to their support page, they have email listed, they have phone number, fax number, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, mailing address. They've made themselves incredibly available, and but they've also set boundaries. They have business hours listed. They say, we're open Monday through Friday, you know, 8 to 5, and we're closed weekends and holidays. And they even have a link. You can click the holidays link and see what holidays are closed.
Oh, so I love that.
It's not That's necessarily great. About sitting next to the phone and being like, we're always going to answer it right away. It's about being accessible, being clear about what you're going to provide in terms of customer service, and then living up to that, and as often as you can, kind of beating those expectations.
And meeting, you've got to exceed those expectations. Setting expectations is huge. I mean, you can imagine, I can imagine how much less frustrated I would be, even in the Bank of America scenario, if I knew. So I called one Friday night, and it was like as soon as I could get back to my desk from a client, and, you know, I'm calling and saying, you know, I need help with this particular issue, and it was fairly late. And they said, oh, well, it's closed. It's after midnight. And I said, wait a minute, it's like 10:30 here. And she's like, well, it's after midnight. And I said, no, wait a minute, for at least California and Hawaii, it's not after midnight. What are the hours of the call center in which time zone? And it turned out it wasn't even, I said, can I assume it's Eastern? Is it Central? What is it? You know, and so it turned out that it was Eastern, but sometimes you'll get those answers, and it's like then you have to go and they don't even tell you the time zone. It's like if it's Central, then you're going to be off again. So that can be really, really frustrating as well. But that, it's cool that you are talking about, you know, getting a sense of how others are doing it and kind of building in, sounds like a bit of research into what you do. So tell me a little bit more about that if you don't mind. You know, like what makes you reach out to a company and you know, ask, you know, what are you guys doing or how do you handle this or how does that work?
Well, I mean, you know, we're trying to provide, as I said at the very beginning, a process for our customers and not so much guidelines, but some things that will help them think about how to provide great customer support and do it in their own way. And so, you know, we have our own thoughts about doing customer support, and obviously I've been doing customer support in the community manager role for a while. All of us here have had experiences with that. Our, you know, our CEO answers support emails all the time. But, you know, we're a startup. That's where our experience lies. And, you know, there's no way we could possibly be utter experts in this because there's plenty of other people who have done this. So I really, and, you know, this goes back to understanding your customers or even just understanding your ecosystem. I spend a lot of time, our CEO spends a lot of time, everyone here really does spend a lot of time talking to people about customer service and trying to understand how they do it. And we've gotten a lot of inspiration from what other people are doing, from companies as big as Zappos to just small two-person companies that we've, you know, got on the phone with and said, oh, well, that's, you know, that's really unique how you do that. And, you know, I think it's the only way any company can understand how to do what they do best, because no matter how smart you are, you can't possibly be smarter than everyone else in the world. So as much of their knowledge as you can absorb, the better. And hopefully you can then make tools for them that make their lives easier.
Yeah, it's you know, the wonderful loop of information sharing. Now, one thing I think is interesting is, you know, obviously any one CEO can only get to a certain portion of emails, you know, because they have other things to get to, like making the company profitable, and, you know, their role isn't really customer service, but they should be in tune with the customer, and I think that's a fine balance, right, which you could probably articulate a lot better than I can. But I noticed, for example, with GoDaddy, who I'm kind of ashamed to admit that is my my domain provider and host my blog, and I say that because it's interesting how a CEO's actions and attitude can affect your perception of a company and how much you like or don't like being a customer of theirs. But I have so many domains now that migrating over, I would lose a bunch of money, blah, blah, blah. So I feel like I'm kind of stuck with them. Mm-hmm. But they have a president at GoDaddy.com address. And it used to be so cool because if you had one of those, you know, kind of technical questions that just needed to be pulled above the fray, because, you know, you're, like I said, you're kind of more of a advanced user and you know a little bit more about what they're actually doing, that you can kind of articulate it well. And I've started getting, you know, I think I got one email back that was like, we're not, something to the effect of, you know, well, this goes to this department now. You know, they're not answering as much just general feedback anymore. And I was really disappointed by that. You know, it was really kind of, like, I felt like if they were going to do that, like, I wouldn't have minded an auto reply that said, you know, due to time constraints, we're going to have to, again, setting expectations, telling me in some way, even if it was a generic canned response that, you know, we're only going to be able to get to these kinds of questions. And if you know, I could have copied and pasted it right then to someone else if they had just auto-replied. It would have been a little bit annoying, but I probably wouldn't have complained about it. You know, what are some of those, like, more, you know, how do you handle questions about that? So, you know, your CEO is answering questions, and certainly other companies may be looking at that, especially young CEOs. They definitely want to be involved, and they might be asking questions like, well, how many emails can I expect, which, you know, we never know until we get in there, right? How do you answer those kinds of questions?
Sorry, just to clarify with the type of question.
Like to the emails to CEOs or feedback to CEOs, if they're thinking about, if you're working with someone new at User Voice and they say, oh, I hadn't really thought about it, but I want to set up an email address because I really want to see the feedback myself and respond myself. And they want to have some sort of expectation about, you know, like, are they going to be able to handle it? Are they going to need help? Is it something that their assistant or, you know, whomever, you know, what someone more in a more administrative role in the office can take care of? Is there kind of guidance or guidelines that you can give them about what to expect?
Well, I think the first thing would be not to open the floodgates. You know, if the CEO is interested in talking to customers, you know, if you're already a large company, start small and just have them come and sit in the support office and answer a couple of issues on, you know, a slow Friday or something. You know, if you're a smaller company, I'd say hopefully the CEO was doing support when you first started, and hopefully they'll continue to hop in. But I think it's a key experience for every CEO, and I think, you know, going back to the issue with surveys, those numbers suddenly have so much different context if, you know, you spend some time actually answering people's issues, and you go, okay, they only think, you know, our site's slow because it does this. So the issue isn't actually that we need to be faster, it's that we need to improve, I don't know, say animation. So mm-hmm. I would say every CEO should be doing support, and if you have a lot of customers, then just go join the support team and say, hey, I'm doing support with you today. Give me a couple of issues to deal with, and dive into it, and be open and be friendly and take the time to understand what your customers are saying, because, you know, time to first resolution, those sort of things, don't matter if you leave the customer unsatisfied or if you're rude to them. And, you know, if you're a CEO, you probably spend a lot of time going to events and shaking people's hands and networking. Think of it the same way. You know, these customers are just as important as the people you're hobnobbing with. And, as we've seen with people like the GoDaddy CEO, you know, you can do any little thing that you think shouldn't really cause a big issue, and your customers can get that. So everyone should be treated with as much respect as anyone else you might meet.
Yeah, like, I think it's great. Yeah, embrace Danica Patrick and NASCAR, but I'm not a NASCAR fan, so if prices go up because you want to spend more money on people endorsing the product that are from NASCAR or any, really any sport, and it seems really obvious because you've been with the company a long time, you're going to annoy people, or I'm going to have that assumption. Like if my prices go up and that's the only reason I'm using GoDaddy is because they're considerably cheaper for XYZ that I need. It's interesting. I think the other interesting thing is when I have seen CEOs, and I've made that recommendation that they go sit with the support team, they often are, they can lend the support team a lot of the context about why the company started, or they can actually start to see some of the passion of why the company exists, as opposed to just sitting there in customer service. And, you know, it can be, I mean, I feel for everybody I talk to in customer service because it's got to be so difficult, and you must feel this as well, you know, where you just feel like sometimes it's like, the product is really bad or there are pain points that are really difficult and you can't fix them. You can't fix them right that moment anyway. You can give feedback, but, you know, you can sometimes watch a CEO and they can just kind of work their magic because they know more about what's being done to try to correct or whatever, and you can learn, hopefully, from a really good CEO that does take the time to answer questions. I would totally agree, and you know, I think that's such a fabulous idea. So, like, in terms of those types of suggestions that you make, are there any best practices that you've recommended over time when people talk to you about customer service? And, you know, you speak a lot, and you talk about different things, but I'm wondering if you've really had the opportunity to delve into some of, you know, are there best practices and customer support, customer service, and kind of, if there are, what they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if I can put in a plug, I'd say definitely check out Understanding Your Customers, the blog I write for User Voice.
Absolutely.
Because that has a lot of that there. But certainly, you know, the most important thing is empathy, and I think empathy goes both ways. It's empathy for the customer and empathy for the company. And like you said, you know, working with a good CEO, you'll understand why certain things can't get done. You know, a good CEO will also listen to you and understand why some things really need to be done because your customers are upset. So really understanding what those customers are saying, communicating that really clearly to the company are key. I think also, you know, putting tools in place, whether it's User Voice or something else, so that your customers can get their own answers is very key. And this doesn't mean a dusty FAQ in the corner of your site. This means really actively putting those things in front of them. Because most people are really, they would be very happy to read an FAQ. It's just they go to your FAQ section and you have 200 FAQs and they can't find the one they want. So people don't really want to spend time on the phone with you. They don't really want to spend time emailing you. They just want an answer, and they'll do whatever they think will get it to them faster. So make it easy for them to find them. And then I think, you know, setting standards and then sticking to them and, if you can, exceeding them are very important. And that can be, you know, answering the phones within 30 seconds like Zappos does, or it can be responding to every email within an hour, which is the goal that we recommend and try to stick to. Or maybe for your company, the right thing is, you know, we'll answer within 5 days. It's all different for different companies, but figure out what you think those standards need to be. Set them, make them clear to the customer, and then hit them. And if you can, try and do a little extra on the side. You know, I mentioned Rapid Buyer earlier, and they don't have support on the weekends, but they told me they also have an option where if you're leaving a voicemail and you think it's really urgent, you can press 1 and it becomes urgent and they'll get, you know, a text message. And so they will actually sometimes answer you on the weekend if you think you have an urgent issue. So, you know, wowing people by providing more, a little bit more than you say you're going to.
Exceeding those expectations.
And then I think, you know, just putting systems in place, both tools and just processes for support and how it's going to scale. Because, yeah, I'm sure at one point, was it Bank of America that you dealt with?
Yeah,
I'm sure at one point Bank of America had fantastic customer service, and they didn't mean for it to become bad. They just didn't scale it well. So I think every company needs to be thinking about that and figuring out how they're going to go about scaling that.
Absolutely. So the blog, again, is Understanding Your Customers, which is, I believe, at understanding.uservoice.com. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep.
And you're Evan Hamilton, which you can always catch you on Twitter, I feel like, and UserVoice, same thing. Very, very good. And you are a rock and band boy, Americana music, with Kicking Tuesday. Yeah, I'm sure that keeps you happy. Got to have balance in life. And I thank you so much for spending the hour with us. We've gotten through a lot of user questions in a short amount of time, relatively speaking.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much, Evan.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Evan Hamilton, who is the community manager at UserVoice. Love Evan, because he always has these ideas that are really pragmatic and that are actionable. And as he noted, he's always looking at other solutions, so that's always fabulous. Thank you, the listener, for tuning in to another episode of The A-List with me, Jennifer Neely. We hope you enjoyed the program. If so, we'd love it if you'd be so kind as to friend us or add us to your favorites here on Blog Talk Radio, or subscribe and rate us if you're over on iTunes. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show, archives, and free informational webcasts at jenniferneely.com. You can check out the boot camp that I'm heading up over at Media Bistro at mediabistro.com/social media marketing bootcamp. It's a mouthful. Thank you for joining us, and have a wonderful week.